Hi to everyone and greetings from Italy. First of all, I would like to thank Professor Dugin for the invitation. I'm honored to take part in this significant event that I judge fundamental in order to share insights and reflections between scholars and researchers from worldwide that are concerned about the present and the future of our common field of interest, that is philosophy. Recently, I had the chance, by participating at the International Conference on the Fourth Political Theory that took place during the last summer, to deliver some considerations concerning the anthropological question related to the so-called death of man. There, I proposed to consider the pivotal role of a new, not substantial, but metamorphic and holistic anthropology. Dasein, that is the core of the fourth political theory and the radical subject, that is its eschatological projection, can be understood through the dark light of Dugin's Metaphysics of Chaos and thanks to a long philosophical tradition concerned about the concept of person, for example the so-called Christian personalism, but also the theory conceived by Julius Evola in Cavalcare la Tigre, named Absolute Person. This is the important link that, in my point of view, should be put at the core of the huge cultural project that comes out from the fourth political theory milieu. Today, I will go further in the analysis of the topic of the radical subject, that is one of the main topics of the current conference. Professor Dugin has touched this topic, the topic of the radical subject, of the new philosophical subject, in his brilliant video conference related to the problem of current philosophy, to the question of phenomenological intentionality. When Professor Dugin spoke about the radical subject as the main feature of this new philosophical perspective. I have been working a lot around this topic because in Italy I am one of the editorial board with Andres Carabelli and Francesco Marotta, who has worked at the Italian version of the book written by Dugin, devoted to the radical subject and its double, that has been translated in Italy with the title Teoria e Fenomenologia del Soggetto Radicale, Theory and Phenomenology of the Radical Subject. That is a clear reference to the famous theory and phenomenology of the absolute individual by Julius Evola. And I had the honor and the pleasure to write the introduction, the preface to the Italian book published by Edizioni Aga. Introducing this topic, the theory and phenomenology of the radical subject, is an arduous task for at least three reasons. First of all, the rich, multiple, dynamic, extreme material of which this text is composed. Secondly, because of the multiple methodological perspectives presented by Dugin, that goes from philosophy to esotericism, from the history of religions to literature, from folklore to theology, from sociology to political philosophy. And third, because of the apophatic character of the radical subject. The radical subject, as I will try to explain, is an eschatological figure that cannot be properly and broadly and completely defined through the dialectic language. There is something in radical subject that goes behind the common language and also the rational language of philosophy. And this Mysterium tremendum et fascinans, to quote the famous expression of Rudolf Otto, that Otto used to define the holy, the sacred dimension, can be properly used also in relation to radical subject theory. The radical subject is something mysterious and fascinating that scares us, but at the same time that attracts us. What we are sure is that radical subject is something against any form of weak thought, against any axiological, museological, metaphysical relativism or reductionism, either scientist and neuroscientist or materialist. Dugin's sources are all united by the challenge against the domination of the unipolar monotonic civilization and its idea of the end of history, as was theorized by Francis Fukuyama. They are also united by the reference to a metaphysical depth, abyssal dimension. These sources remind us that decadence is a destiny only as a choice. Like every really autonomous choice is at the same time also a destiny. The crisis must be recognized, but once this arduous acknowledgement is accomplished, it turns out that, to quote Hölderlin's famous sentence, where the danger is, also grows the saving power. Thus, the historical metaphysical contextualization of the radical subject offers to Dugin the opportunity to elaborate an accurate phenomenology of postmodernity. Many pages of the radical of the theory and phenomenology of the radical subject are dedicated to this topic. Dugin is deeply aware of the need to overcome the dualistic opposition between tradition and modernity, typical of perennialism, or better, to integrate this dualism, understanding how much the contradictory dynamics internal to the modern era, which many classical traditionalists already had fully understood and discussed, are in a stage of radical and intrinsic transformation, until the point of leading it to an intimate reversal. It is the so-called dialectic of enlightenment that Adorno and Horkheimer have broadly discussed. The modernity has transfigured itself into modernism, the ideological representation of the blind modern itself. Modernity, for instance, experiences a dynamic acceleration that leads it, according to an unavoidable unintended consequences, to generate its own nemesis. At this point, the postmodern arises. It shows a new form of crisis, an unprecedented manifestation of degeneration. The symptoms of the emergence of new demons, but it must also reveal, so Dugin firmly states, the appearance of new gods, and the appearance of those human figures capable of awakening and embodying these new gods, or the, to adopt Heideggerian language, the Deus adveniens, the Deus, the God that is going to come. It is precisely here that the radical subject makes its own appearance. It is an anthropological, or better, ultra-supra-anthropological figure that Dugin explicitly elaborates by projecting Nietzsche's Superman, Nietzsche's Übermensch, and Evola's differentiated man in the postmodern era. However, this is not a simple recontextualization of these figures in the new historical paradigm. The radical subject is in fact a new extreme formulation of the anthropological problem. It is the anti-humanist figure par excellence, who overcomes the loss of the center, that is symbol of the anti-traditional existential dimension, and makes itself its own fundamental center. The radical subject is thus the axial centering that becomes possible only in the wake of the loss of tradition and its reconquering in interiore homine. It is the flame that in the mythical catabasis fires the hypogean experience of the Eros. It is the power that in alchemy, testing the nigredo, pierces the so-called nigrum nigrius nigro, the black blacker than black, until it leads to the peaks of the rubedo. With the current absence of the so-called, to quote Junger, appearance of man, we can only imagine a future return of man. This is, according to my opinion, the current responsibility for philosophers. Wozu Philosophen in dürftige Zeit, says the title of our conference. I think that their responsibility, the responsibility of philosophers, is precisely embodied in this preparation. The advent of the radical subject, in fact, is not a pure experience of hope. Instead, it is an act of decision and will. It is a ritual and a sacrifice. It is a paradoxical sacrum facere in the absence of the sacred, in the absence of the holy, in the absence of the divine. It is a pure act of metaphysical witness. The Götterdämmerung, the so-called twilight of the gods, also reserves particular itineraries for mysterious pilgrimages, interior pilgrimages. The premises outlined so far will make any analytical formulation of the figure of the radical subject misleading. It is Dugin himself who avoids a descriptive and analytic approach to this complex metamorphical figure, to which one can at best, according to Junger's lection, turn through Annäherungen, that in German means approaches, aimed at grasping its radiations in the immanence. So the entire theory and phenomenology of the radical subject can be understood as a functional hermeneutic and narratological construction to disclose for unpredictable and fleeting intuitions the inner acquisition of this very notion itself. If on the one hand the radical subject constitutes a perturbing call to the Andenken, that means what is to be thought, what every figure of subjectivity elaborated in the history of ideas carries within themselves, it is also true, on the other hand, that it effectively channels a large number of similar formulations through European culture, and not only that. Behind the modern Cartesian subject, but also here is one of the main Dugin's new feature, behind also the traditional non-subject. Here we can find the radical subject, that is in fact a reference to the roots, to the radix, with all the mythical symbolic significance that this image evokes, but also to subjectivity, which is an intentional and voluntary dimension that is typical of modernity. Of that modernity that Dugin with his theory is fighting. And that's, that has a deep reason. If in the Golden Age man lives in harmony with the cosmic totality, and his identity with is completely linked to his own metaphysical radix, the restoration in the contemporary world of this ancient integral metaphysical fullness should start in the middle of Kali Yuga, of the Iron Age, from the only figure who still seems partially to exist, albeit repeatedly under attack, that is subjectivity. The radical subject burns with its own flame. It is the tradition that becomes subject when tradition has no more places to objectify itself. It is possible, I've tried to do it in the preface of the Italian text, to find and reflect on some explicit or not explicit sources of the idea of the radical subject, some of them have been quoted by Dugin himself, it's evident that this idea can be referred to the Übermensch, to the theory of Superman by Nietzsche, of the myth of Zarathustra, the idea that man in modernity needs to go through nihilism and needs to experiment the real core of the eternal return, that is not simply a cyclical representation of time, but is better underlined a spiralic time, where in the moment of Kairos, Ion, the eternal outside of time, can enter inside Kronos, the common time. Evident is also the reference to Evola's perspective, to Michael Stetta, that was important also for Evola himself, but I've tried to find also some references to other and more ancient authors, such as Niccolò Cusano, that speaks about the hidden light that can be preserved also in the at the end of time, in the period of crisis, and some interesting theological reflection in the theory of apokatastasis in Origen. Then we can also refer to the to many authors from the Conservative Revolution, for example the idea of rebel and of anarch in Junger, and the concept of Dasein in Heidegger. The radical subject can be conceived therefore as the self of Dasein, to use Heideggerian language, the most intimate sphere of Dasein, within the struggle for ontological authenticity, the Eigentlichkeit. It is the motionless and invisible engine that exists even in an apparently schizophrenic world such as ours. To return to Heidegger, the radical subject can be also seen as the core of the fundamental ontology, as the small point that is the intersection, that is neither internal nor external, that vibrates between earth and sky, man and gods. Radical subject, then, is in my view strictly linked also to the figures, to the topics of myth and symbols. Against the demythologization and rationalization undertaken by the Enlightenment and positivist civilization, it's important, and many scholars are going in this direction, to reestablish the importance of myth and symbol as important key figures and hermeneutical instruments in order to comprehend reality, to comprehend the relation between microcosmos and macrocosmos, between immanence and transcendence. The narratological and meaningful dimension connected to myths and symbols need nowadays, and this is another important task that can be, I think, a fruitful debate in this conference, to be analyzed and taken as important structures, museological structure of a new mythical symbolic hermeneutic. The radical subject is also linked to the importance of decision, a sovereign, self-centered decision that is the original foundation of the primordial rule, that is still connected to mythological and ritual dimension. It is that decision which, according to Carl Schmitt, is by essence immediate, in the sense that law and power do not autonomously and for themselves have the charisma of legitimacy, which must be recognized by the human gaze amazed by the miracle, by that mysterium tremendum et fascinans that I have quoted before. To decide in Latin means precisely to sever, to cut off. The radical subject decides by deeply separating the spaces of being, thus realizing that sovereign experience which, complementarily to Schmitt, was conceived by Georges Bataille, which defined it in terms of a clear and, in a certain sense, solar instant adherence. The experience of decision coagulates in the post-sacral will. The post-sacral will is an expression by Dugin and refers to a special ontological will which awakens the flame of the radical subject. It is clearly not the Promethean will of the individuum, the modern and modernistic anthropological figure, but the subtle metaphysical connection between the cosmic event of fate, disclosure, and manifestation from one hand, and the identification from the other hand with the, within the design of its identity with this event of fate disclosure. Dugin speaks of the radical subject as a lost angel, a destroying angel, a terrifying angel. These are pregnant theological references which gives the idea of the importance to contextualize the figure of radical subject also in the tradition of angelology. The image used by Dugin can in fact be understood as a simple metaphor, and in this case, that is however important and significant, the radical subject is similar to the angel because it has a link with God and supersensible dominion. It is a figure more than human, a messenger of transcendence in immanence. But this connection can be also understood as an integral ontological symbol description. According to this latter reading, the radical subject, conceived as angel, fits into that fascinating and complex theological cosmos that is present in Christian, but also in Islamic, Jewish, even polytheistic traditions. At its center, the figure of the Angelus, which proceeds behind the intraworldly entities and moves them in harmony with its intelligible Son, is the key figure. Its tremendous light, which reflects the origin, can be recognized in the power of the radical subject, in its invocation to an otherness that is all enclosed in the eternal present. The angelic country, writes Dugin in Theory and Phenomenology of Radical Subject, the angelic country of nowhere is only in us, innerlich. The angelological dimension of being hides itself in the heart of the creatures. Is not the radical subject in this perspective an uncertain angel who realizes its own sovereign decision at the end of time? It fights against destiny. It wants the impossible. It hopes against all hopes. It is even the last eschatological manifestation of God, who can manifest himself or represent himself to man only angelically. In the infinite and very serious game of references and analogies, the radical subject linked to this theological angel are a couple to meditate on. Also, Walter Benjamin has written something very interesting about the figure of the angel, taking inspiration from the famous Paul Klee's painting Angelus Novus. Walter Benjamin interprets it philosophically as, and now I quote Benjamin, the angel of history. His face is turned to the past. Where a chain of events appears to us, he sees a single catastrophe, which relentlessly piles up ruins upon ruins. The radical subject is, on the other hand, differently from the angel of Paul Klee, the angel of meta-history. Its face is not turned to the past, but is the motionless, axially centered engine of its own ineluctable and absolute decision. Like Angelus Novus, it sees the word catastrophe, but unlike him, it conveys it in the form of energy, creating a barrier, a wall, against the wind of progress. It is an interior catechon to the dialectic between past and future, mediated by the sense of nostalgia that is embodied in Paul Klee and Benjamin's vision of angel. It opposes the ecstasy of the strong, powerful, naked presence. The long and hard separation from God that the subject has suffered through the century of materialistic history will make more pleasant and powerful. This is the idea, I think, that can emerge from Dugin's reflection, the reunion with the apophatic Deus absconditus that is waiting for it at the end of time. The theory concerning the radical subject is, as I hope to have underlined, very complex and still open. As long as history and man experience is still open to the manifestation of this eschatological figure, there are some related topics that I don't have now the opportunity to touch, but I think it's important to mention as future research topics and questions that could be, I think, useful and interesting to debate. And there are at least, I guess, 5 points, 5 problems that still need to be analyzed, touched, and maybe partially resolved. The first one is linked to the big issue that can be expressed with this question. How is it possible for modern nihilist, rationalistic men to realize again the enchantment of our gaze, to recreate that zauberte Welt that has disappeared without leaving this process as a pure form of rational imposture, of external, not natural, somehow false description? And that means also, how is it possible to gain, to regain that mythic symbolic gaze on reality? The second point is related to the difficult to recognize the radical subject, and not to misunderstand this figure with other figures that are at the core of modernity and postmodernity. Radical subject has many elements, in starting from his subjectivity, that makes this figure similar to some Titanic, Promethean subjects. So it should be interesting to deepen which are the differences and the common points between radical subjects and the postmodern Titanic, Promethean, Faustian dimension. The third point is more philosophical, more theoretical, I would say, and concerns the problem of will, and is linked to the previous point. The radical subject is moved by this post-sacral will that can be that has to be distinguished from the common subjectivist and also nihilist individual will, the will of the man, of the modern man, the will of the post-man of post-modernity. And so it should be interesting to deepen the difference between this kind of will and the post-sacral will. The fourth point is related, I think, to transhumanism or posthumanism, how is it called? And the idea that although there are many versions of these perspectives that are structurally expression of the worst nihilist postmodernity, there are some topics related to the destiny, to the eschatological, intrinsical dimension of the Abendland, of Western civilization, some aspects related to the role of technique that cannot be avoided. I think this element it's evident, but can be maybe formulated in a new way, in a meaningful, also metaphysical way. And these problems that have been touched by transhumanists, posthumanists, scholars and researchers, although partially give conclusion that are clearly opposite to a traditionalist orientation, also in my view put on the table some important elements of discussion. And there are some specific version of transhumanism that have clear in mind this idea of the man has a process, of man as not something rigid, static, monolithic as the modern man, and as a man open to the otherness in a general way, and so could be deepened also in a fruitful way in comparison, also at this point searching for the common elements and the opposite elements with the theory of the radical subject. Finally, another important topic that is more related to a religious field concern the relation with these reflections that are all linked to an eschatological and perspective that is referred to the experience of the single man, of the subject, and the relation between this theory and the traditional churches and religions. So how is the figure of the radical subject, which place the figure of the radical subject detains in relation with traditional churches, traditional spiritual path? These five points can generate, I think, important elements of discussion, maybe already during this conference, and for sure in the next month, that will see all of us hopefully meeting and discussing again about the fundamental topic that Professor Dugin has chosen to debate in this day, Wozu Philosophen in dürftiger Zeit. This was just a brief introduction to the radical subject theory and more generally to the problem of anthropology in the postmodern era and the question of the relation between spirituality, transcendence, and the immanent experience of modern and postmodern man. Thank you very much for your attention, and we'll meet during the conference.